Chapter 8 War Master. When in the heart of the foe, show only your strength. Never bare your throat, never sheathe your sword. We are Astartes, not diplomats, not ambassadors. We are warriors all. If you are within the enemy's fortress, you have already breached his best defenses. You hold all the advantages. Use them. The war sage Malkarion excerpted from his work The Tenebrous Path. Abaddon smiled as he spoke. A smile was the last thing Talos had been expecting. In his own suit of Terminator warplate, the Warmaster dwarfed his men and the Atramentar alike, and the consummately crafted black ceramite he wore was bedecked in ornate finery, emblazoned with brass and bronze edges, and bearing the glaring, slitted, fire-orange eye of Horus on the center of his chest plate. A cloak of grey-white fur, the hide of some huge wolf beast, was draped across his massive shoulders. As with his elite warriors, his back sported spear-like trophy racks, each of them impaling a clutch of Astartes' helms. Several of them were at the right angle to stare lifelessly at Talos, their dead gaze an unsubtle reminder of the millions of lives lost to the Warmaster's machinations in 10,000 years of rebellion and heresy. His right hand ended in a vicious power claw of archaic, unique design. The bladed talons, as long as an Astartes' arm, curved and glinted in the half-light of the flickering wall lamps. Horus, favored son of the Emperor, had worn that gauntlet in the Great Crusade and the heresy that followed. He had used it to slay the angel Sanguinius and wound the Emperor unto the edge of death. Now the dread weapon graced the fist of his Jean son, the leader of his fallen legion. That weapon alone almost brought about the urge to kneel, to show respect to the one who carried the blades of ultimate heresy. But it was the Warmaster's face that drew Talos's attention above all else. Abaddon would never be considered handsome, and the regal lethality emanating from him was nothing a human could project. His face was lined and scarred from centuries of battle, the marks across his pale skin speaking of 1,000 battles on 1,000 worlds. His head was shaven, but for a topknot of his blue-black hair. In his eyes, Talos saw the death of the galaxy. They burned with inner light, made bright by the dreams of conquest that infested his every waking moment, yet tinged with desperate fury, a longing to inflict vengeance upon the heart of the Imperium. Like chaos itself, Abaddon was a clash of contradictions, and Talos hated his warm, welcoming smile. He could almost smell the corruption beneath the man's skin, a rank scent of charred metal and polluted flesh that teased the edges of Talos's senses. "You smell that?" he voxed to First Claw.
"Yes," from Zal. "I smell spoiled meat and something more. They are ripe with corruption, all of them. The Terminators are likely mutated under their armor."
From there, their replies deteriorated in usefulness.
"The War Master smells like he's been boiling human flesh in engine oil," Sirion ventured, slightly less helpfully.
All Talos got back from Uzas was an acknowledgement blip, a single burst of quiet static indicating an affirmation.
"I thank you for coming to meet me, brother," the Warmaster said, his words graceful where his voice was not. It rumbled from his throat, guttural and feral, another contradiction to add to the growing list. Talos wondered how much of this was intentional, designed to throw supplicants off guard when they came before the great despoiler.
"I have come, Warmaster," Talos said.
and his targeting reticule locked onto the Black Legion commander, flashing white as it registered the weapons on his person. The Talon of Horus, the Storm Bolter attached to the Great Lightning Claw, the blade at the Warmaster's hip. Threat, an Ostraman warning rune flickered across his retinal display. Talos didn't dismiss it from view.
"And you do not kneel," Abaddon said, his growl not quite letting the words become a question. "I kneel only before my Primarch, Warmaster. Since his death, I kneel before no one. I mean no disrespect." "I see."
Talos's attention was drawn to the Talon of Horus for a moment, as the Warmaster gestured with the scythe-like claws to the door.
"My brothers and honored Night Lord guests, leave us. The Prophet and I have much to discuss."
Talos's vox link clicked live.
"We'll be nearby," Sirion said. "We will remain with the Just Erin,"
Malek grunted. Talos could hear his eagerness with troubling clarity. Sirion had picked up on it, too.
"You sound like you want them to start something."
Neither of the Atramentar replied, though the others could make out muted vox clicks as the two Terminators shared private communication. Once they were alone in the ruined mess hall, Talos scanned the room, his eyes panning over the wreckage.
"This is not the kind of place I had expected to find you, sir."
"No?"
Abaddon stalked closer, his movements lumbering in the heavy plate, yet somehow more threatening than other Terminators. It was the economy of his movement, Talos realized. The Warmaster's every movement was precise, measured, and exact. He wore the armor like a second skin.
"A destroyed mess hall in an internment spire. Hardly the place to find the one who once led us all."
"I still lead you all, Talos."
"From a certain point of view," the Night Lord allowed. "I wanted to walk the halls of this prison spire myself, and I have neither the time nor the desire to stand upon worthless ceremony. I was here, and I demanded your presence, so it is here that we meet."
Talos felt his skin crawl at the superiority in the commander's tone. Who was he to speak to one of the sons of Conrad Kurz in this way? A captain in a broken legion, now twisted by the favor of demons. He deserved respect for his might, but not obeisance, not fealty or subservience.
"I'm here, Warmaster. Now tell me why."
"So I might meet you face to face. The Black Legion has its share of sorcerers and prophets, Talos."
"So I have heard. They are precious to me, and vital to my plans. I take great heed of their words." "So I have also heard."
"Indeed."
The hateful smile came again.
"I wonder to myself, where do you fit in? Are you content with the existence your legion offers you? Do they respect your gift for what it is?"
And then it was clear. He knew what this was about. How alarmingly unsubtle. The Night Lord suppressed a growl of anger, eyes narrowed on the flickering threat rune that still played across his visor display. His armor's systems tracked his rising heartbeat, and suspecting battle flooded his veins with potent chemical stimulants. It took several moments for Talos to exhale a shivering breath and speak, ignoring the burn of his energized muscles.
"I am a breed apart from the creatures you call sorcerers, sir."
Abaddon ceased his vague pacing, looking at his reflection in the silver sheen of his claws.
"You think I do not detect the disapproval in your tone?"
Evidently not, my lord. It is disgust, not merely disapproval.
Now Abaddon looked to him, the claws of his relic talon slicing the air in silent, slow strokes by his side. It almost seemed a habit of his, the way a bored man might crack his knuckles. The despoiler's claws were always in motion, always cutting, even if it was just air.
"You insult me, Night Lord," Abaddon mused, still smiling. "I cannot change the heart of my legion, War Master. I am, as you name me, a Night Lord. I am no warp-touched sorcerer or fallen weaver of spells. I share the gene seed of the Night Haunter. From my father, not the ruinous powers, did I inherit this gift."
"Your honesty is refreshing. I am surprised you think so, War Master."
"Talos," Abaddon said, facing the Night Lord once more, "another Black Crusade is in the making."
Here he paused, holding up his claw, and Talos was forcibly reminded of a painting he had once seen of Horus, clutching a burning world in that same gauntlet. It assumed at the time the world was supposed to be Terra. Ironic, then, that the painting depicted Horus's ultimate failure. In his grip burned the one world he couldn't conquer.
"This time..." The War Master closed his unnatural eyes, and the silver talons trembled. "This time, the fortress worlds around the Cadian Gate will burn until their surface is nothing but an ashen memory. This time, Cadia itself will die."
Talos watched the War Master, saying nothing, until his self-absorbed ecstasy faded and he opened his eyes once more. The Night Lord broke the silence that stretched between them by walking to the corpse of an inmate and kneeling by the body. The man had bled a great deal across the remains of the table he lay upon, but had died from the intense, blunt trauma to the side of his head. Talos dipped his first two fingers in the congealing puddle of the mortal's blood, raising them to his speaker grill in order to inhale the coppery scent. He hungered to taste it, to let the life matter flow through his gene-enhanced form and absorb it into his veins, so he might sense a ghostly echo of the man's dreams, his fears, his desires and terrors. The wonders of Astarte's physiology. To taste the life of those whose blood you have shed, truly a hunter's gift.
"You seem unimpressed by my assurance," the War Master said. "With respect, sir, all of your previous crusades have failed." "Is that so? Are you one of my inner circle to judge whether my plans came to pass and my objectives were met?"
Talos flexed his hand, the gauntlet that would soon be replaced by sections from Faravan's armor.
"You do harm to the Imperium, but never truly advance our cause. Are you asking if the Night Lords will stand with you as you attack Cadia? I cannot speak for my legion in its entirety. The Exalted will follow you, as he always does. I'm sure many more of our leaders will do the same."
Abaddon nodded, as if this confirmed his point, the veins under his cheeks darkening as he grinned.
"You speak of disunity. Your legion lacks a figurehead. Many claim to be the Night Haunter's heir. The Talon Master has vanished, but his claim was no stronger than any other, even with his possession of one of our symbolic relics. Too many other leaders have similar items once carried by our father. Captain Acerbas leads the largest coalition of companies, but again, his insistence reeks of desperation and need.
No true claimant has come forth, as you did with your legion. Our father's throne sits empty.
Again, I hear the disquiet in your words. I am not hiding it, War Master.
Admirable. So tell me, does your heart not cry out to take that throne yourself?
Talos froze. He hadn't expected this. He'd suspected the War Master would seek to use his curse in some way, perhaps even drawing him into the ranks of the Black Legion as a pet advisor. But this was new. And he suspected it was a bluff designed to throw his thoughts into disparity.
No, he replied.
You hesitated. You asked a difficult question.
Abaddon walked closer to Talos, his boots crushing debris beneath each thundering tread. The helms and human skulls impaled upon the trophy racks rattled together, birthing a clacking melody like some barbarous musical instrument. Threat, the rune flickered, and the Night Lord looked through his red vision at the War Master, no more than 10 meters distant. He couldn't help but compare him to the original bearer of the title, Horus, beloved son of the Emperor, Lord of the 18 Legions. Talos had only seen the first War Master once, but it was a moment of devastating potency in the storm of his memory.
I saw the first War Master once, he voiced aloud, without meaning to.
Abaddon chuckled, a series of throaty, predatory grunts.
Where? Daromar, we fought alongside the Lunar Wolves in the capital city. The Lunar Wolves.
Abaddon openly sneered at the use of his legion's first name, before they'd become the Sons of Horus in honor of their Primarch, and long before they'd become the Black Legion to expunge the shame of their father's failure.
Days of blindness and war, based upon the darkest of lies. True. But they were days of unity, Talos said, recalling the majesty of Horus at the head of his legion, his army of grey-white polished to a finish of ivory and pearl. He was human, but more. Astartes, but more. Contained within the first Primarch was all that was great and glorious within humanity. Distilled to perfection by the flesh-smiths and gene-weavers of the Emperor's hidden fortress laboratories. To stand within his sight was to bathe in light, to be flooded by inspiration more vital and real than the stinging chemicals pumping through Astarte's blood. In his eye-aching brilliance, Horus drew everything to him. Merely by taking the field, he ensured he was the fulcrum upon which everything spun. He became the heart of the battle, a maelstrom of slaughter, untouched by the mud and the blood of the battlefield, even as he reaped the lives of the foe. And Talos had barely seen him. He'd formed his opinion of the living god from the other side of a cityscape battleground, seeing little more than the juddering images allowed by his helm's zoomed vision as he sought to assess the Lunar Wolves' front lines. It had been like glancing at a moving painting of an ancient hero. He looked at Abaddon. How times change.
What do you recall of War Master Horus? Abaddon asked.
My eyes hurt in his presence. Even from a distance, Talos said. I am Nostromo born, he added, knowing that would explain everything.
You Night Lords, so literal.
The thought seemed to entertain him, which struck Talos as petty beyond belief. Clarity came upon him in that moment. Abaddon was an avatar for what the traitor legions had become. Talos watched him now, knowing neither of them were the equals of their Primarch progenitors. None of the legions could make that claim.
They were all mere shadows of their fathers, and their fathers had failed. The thought was a humbling one, and the weak claws of melancholy reached for his conscious mind again. These encroaching thoughts he dismissed with a scowl, refocusing his attention by acquiring target locks on the weakest points of Abaddon's armor plating. Precious few existed, but he felt his armor's machine spirit responding, awakening again, teased back into anger. It helped him focus.
"You have still not stated your reasons for summoning me, War Master."
"I will be blunt, then. After all, we have a crusade to forge in the coming days. Tell me, Prophet, have you seen anything of the Krythe War in your recent visions?"
"No,"
lied Talos immediately. "No?" The War Master narrowed his eyes. "Just no. How very declarative.
I have seen nothing that will help you plan, nothing that will bring you new information or aid in any way.
But you have seen something.
Nothing you have any right to know."
The claws chimed quietly as they clanged together, Abaddon closing and opening his gauntlet just once.
"I am not famous for my patience," he said slowly, his voice ripe with threat. "But it is enough that my suspicions are confirmed. You are a seer, and you have seen what will come. You seem to care a great deal about my visions. I thought you had sorcerers of your own."
A streak of amused pride colored his words. Abaddon didn't seem to notice or to care if he did.
"They are having difficulty piercing the warp's veil. You evidently have done what they cannot. You have witnessed the future. It should not surprise you that a commander would wish dearly for such information."
Talos said nothing, knowing what this was building up to.
"Talos, my brother, I have an offer for you." "I refuse. I thank you for the honor of whatever this offer might have been, but my answer is no." "Why so blatant a refusal?"
Abaddon scowled now, the first time he had, and the grimace revealed filthy, blackened teeth behind his bluish lips.
"If you are offering me the chance to lead the Eighth Legion, I refuse because it is an impossible task, and not one within your power to grant. If you are asking me to leave my legion, I refuse because I have no interest in doing so."
"You reject my offer without hearing it."
"Your offer will not be in my interests. There is little of any legion in what remains to us, War Master. I no longer believe we will be the death of the Imperium. I no longer believe we are true to our fathers. Corruption has its claws deep within many of us."
"Then why do you still fight?"
Abaddon's glower remained, his teeth clenched and his eyes raw in their open glare.
"Because I have nothing else. I was born to fight and forged in the fires of war. I am Astartes. I fight because it is right that we fight. The Emperor abandoned the Great Crusade and demanded humanity pave the way for his ascension to godhood. I don't expect to topple him from the Golden Throne, but such hubris, such evil, must always be opposed."
"And what of Kurz?"
Talos stepped closer, his muscles bunched.
"You will not speak his name with such disrespect, Abaddon."
"You think you intimidate me, worm? I think I address your Primarch by his title as the First War Master, despite his ultimate failure. You will do the same honor for the Lord of my Legion, who was vindicated even in death."
Then tell me, what of the Night Haunter? Does his murder mean nothing to you?
The Emperor betrayed my Gene Father, even without the Great Heresy's ideals. The need for vengeance alone would be enough for me to live my life only to see the Imperium fall.
At this, Abaddon nodded again. I respect the Night Lords as brothers, but you are right. You are a broken legion.
And you are not?
The War Master turned, his voice dropping to a threatening murmur.
What did you say?
Threat, 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 the rune flickered.
Do you fight, War Master, because you believe you can still win? After centuries of defeat, after failed Black Crusades, after infighting and war has bled your legion dry and draped you in ignominy among the other legions? Is it not true your men are slaved to demons to make up for the great losses you have sustained since the death of your Primarch? You leech strength from other sources, because your own legion's might is almost gone.
Silence answered this proclamation. Talos broke it again.
This meeting is a facet of that. You wonder about how my power will benefit your failing armies.
Abaddon might have laughed. It would have been the act of a great leader to laugh, to humor a lesser warrior, to bring him around to his own way of thinking through persuasion and empathy, even were it all false. But Abaddon was not such a leader. He was shrewd enough, at least, to guess Talos would never be fooled. The storm bolter barked once. Two shells roared from the muzzles, two bolts thrown by screaming demon mouths shaped from dirty brass. Talos's chest plate, the defiled aquila of polished ivory resplendent upon it, cracked under the impact. But it wasn't the bolts themselves that brought him low. In a burst of inky mist, black gas streamed around him. On his knees, before he could even blink, his retinal display registered alarms and flashing runic warnings of life signs plummeting. His armor's machine spirit was enraged, and he felt the rising desire through his connection junctures to slaughter anything living before him, the Astartes instinct, defending oneself by killing all threats. The machine spirit of Talos's armor was a bastardized hybrid sentience of anger, pride, and caution, born from a meshing of the many suits of armor he had cannibalized for use over his years of war. It growled in his blood now, howling through the socket ports in his skull, his spine, his limbs, firing his own rage. He recognized its frustration instantly from the runic display on his visor. It was unable to reconcile depleted life warnings with the insane fact that somehow all of the ammunition counters still read at maximum. He was wounded, without returning fire. This was unnatural. It was not how wars were fought. It had never happened before.
Praesite, he demanded from his armor's soul.
His vision blanketed in thermal vision, a facade of cold blues, but still somehow failed to pierce the choking gas. And he was choking. That in itself was insane. Each breath drew in another wisp of the black gas, filtering in through his cracked chest plate, its scent like that of burning tar, and its taste like the burned earth a week after a battle. He felt the muscles in his throat and chest spasm, tightening like cables of iron. Life runes flashed in alarm, runes he'd never seen before. Poison. He was actually being poisoned.
Abaddon,
he roared, immediately horrified at the breathy whisper of his voice.
You die for this.
It was when he heard the answering laugh that Talos drew Aurum. It took him an indeterminate number of heartbeats to realize the blade had fallen from his nerveless grasp, to clatter on the wreckage covering the ground. All he tasted was blood and charred soil,
All he felt was the cold, cold pain of his lungs going into spasming shock lock.
I have an offer for you, Prophet. The War Master's voice came from somewhere he couldn't see. He could barely raise his head. He hadn't even managed to look at the split Aquila on his chest and assess the damage to his armor. The draining charts and numbers filtered across his vision told him all he needed to know about his condition. Poisoned. How was that even possible? The gas, demon mist. Kill him before you die. The thought rose unbidden from the depths of his mind, and for a moment, the unfamiliar sense of it left him cold. It was closer to a thought than a voice, an urge rather than an order, and in that doubt lay the answer. This close to death, the machine spirit of his warplate pushed easily into his fading mind. It was an invasion of unpleasant pressure, so much colder and more focused than the primal emotions and survival instincts usually massaged against his conscious thoughts. Those were easily ignored, tamed with a moment's concentration. This was a lance of ice to the brain, strong enough to twitch his limbs in a dying attempt at obeying the words.
And, the War Master continued, if you will not hear this offer from me, you will hear it from my allies.
That was a bolter.
As soon as he'd said the words, Sirion raised his own bolt gun and leveled it at the bullish helm of Falcus.
That, he said again in a lower voice, was a bolter. Tell me I'm wrong.
He had the audio readout displays of his helm at the edge of his vision to assure him that he was absolutely correct, but he was caught off guard and needed to buy time. The Night Lords and Black Legion squared off in the central aisle, surrounded by 100 and more kneeling prisoners.
Abaddon, they had been chanting. Abaddon, Abaddon, Abaddon,
with all the conviction and reverence of a religious rite. But they'd stopped the moment the Night Lords raised their weapons.
Stormbolter, corrected Uzas, and they all heard the smile in his voice. Not a bolter, two barrels. Talos is dead. Life rune is unstable.
It was true. A single bark of a bolt weapon in the distant mess hall, and the life rune had started flickering on the edge of their retinal displays. As the standoff stretched out, the Black Legion Terminators remained impassive.
Easy for them, Sirion thought, backed up by over 100 fanatics. Talos, he voxed.
Nothing. He switched channels with a blink at the right rune.
Septimus.
Again, nothing. He blinked at a third rune.
Covenant, this is First Claw.
Silence.
We're being jammed,
he voxed to the squad.
Night Lords, Falcus of the Black Legion murmured. There's been a regrettable incident with your Thunderhawk. Come, we will provide alternate transportation back to your ship.
Fight them, Zal vowed. Kill them all. Blood and skulls and souls,
Uzas sounded like he was drooling again.
We must fight. Keep your damn heads, you fools.
This from Garadon, Hammer of the Exalted.
Even we would be overwhelmed in this place.
Aye, Sirion nodded.
We find answers first, then take whatever vengeance is deserved. Fight, stressed Zal.
The ignominy of being marched out of here was clearly too much for him.
We can't leave Talos here. The legions stand on the precipice of battle with what happens in this moment.
Garadon's gruff voice cut into Zal's threatened raving.
And they outnumber us in orbit as well as on the surface. Bide your time and strike when the prey is weakest.
You're a coward, Garadon, Zal snarled.
And you will answer for that slur,
the Hammer of the Exalted replied.
But lower your bolter. This is not a fight. We can win.
The Night Lords lowered their weapons and allowed themselves to be escorted from the hall. Jeers and laughter followed them as the prisoners rose to their feet. Several hurled bottles or fired stolen shotguns into the air, triggering alert runes across the Night Lord's visors.
"Every single one of these wretches will bleed for this," Zar promised.
Affirmation blips came back from every member of the squad. A bottle struck Uzas on the side of the helm, and the others heard him laughing.
"What the hell is so funny?" Zar snapped.
"They played us for fools,"
Uzas was grinning.
"Killed Talos, killed Thunderhawk crew, captured our gunship. Clever moves. Is it wrong to be impressed that they outplayed us so easily?"
"Shut your mouth," Zar said. "They didn't kill Talos. Is Lifron still alive?"
"Same difference. He's theirs now. Good riddance."
Sirion ignored their bickering. Surrounded as they were by kneeling mortals, his secret sense was afire with sensation. Every one of these humans was afraid beneath their masks of worship. Their fears bled into his consciousness in trickling spurts of conflicting voices.
"Don't want to die?"
"Freedom! At last! Will they let us go?"
"A trick. They'll kill us."
Sirion closed his eyes, feeling their mass fear threatening to overwhelm his own thoughts in a sickening blur of barely understood emotion. As a child, he had fallen into the Sump Lake in the depths of Juria Hive's Underhive foundations. Unable to swim, in the endless seconds before his father had saved him, he'd been sinking slowly into the black, staring up at the firelit lightness rippling on the water's surface above. Being around too many humans always reminded him of that one moment when he'd felt himself fading, swallowed whole and forgotten by some vast, extraneous, remorseless force. He'd known he was dying, staring up at the dimming half-light above, feeling everything within his mind slipping from his grasp. He knew the same now. The feeling was the same, coming with the familiar cold, dull realization of inevitability. It was just taking much longer to happen. Sirion's vision focused as he concentrated on the voices in his vox, instead of the whispers within his head. He switched to helm speakers again, letting some of his anger bleed into his tone.
"You, son of Horus!"
One of the Black Legion Terminators turned, still lumbering forwards.
"Night Lord? What exactly has occurred to our Thunderhawk?"
"An event of the most terrible misfortune," he said, and Sirion picked up the muted vox clicks as the Black Legionnaires laughed over their internal squad channel.
"As a courtesy, we will return you to orbit with one of our own transports," Falcus said.
At the end of the hallway, the lift doors rumbled open again. An Astartes in black power armor walked towards them, a smile on his pale features and a glint in his dark eyes. Sirion voxed to the others as soon as the newcomer began walking towards them.
"You were right, after all, Uzas."
The Night Lords watched the approaching figure, each one recognizing him, each one resisting the urge to aim their weapons and open fire. Uzas nodded, still amused.
"I told you it was a trap." "My brothers! My brothers!" the newcomer said.
The oily pools of his eyes drank them in one at a time.
"How it pleases me," he spoke in fluent Nostraman, "to see you all again."
Septimus and Eurydice were still in the cockpit. Septimus was both annoyed and worried, though he tried to let neither of these emotions show. In fairness, he wasn't doing a tremendous job of it. Eurydice could tell the words he occasionally muttered in Nostraman were curses. She was doing an equally poor job of seeming unafraid. But the Astartes had been gone for long enough to set Septimus's teeth on edge, and she found herself infected by his worry. The vox had died almost an hour before, as soon as the Astartes had descended into the prison spire. With a sudden, sharp crack of feedback, connection had been lost, and static was all he'd heard from any of the Astartes since then. That in itself didn't worry him. He doubted there was anything here that could do the demigods any real harm. He was, however, worried about himself and Eurydice. To no avail, Septimus had been trying the vox once every 5 minutes since it failed. He could reach neither First Claw in the complex below, nor the Covenant of Blood in orbit, and this was starting to smell suspiciously like a trap. It was time to consider his options. He'd briefly considered taking off and staying on station by keeping the gunship in hover a few dozen meters above the platform. That, unfortunately, wasn't viable for two reasons. Firstly, his orders had been to stay where he was. Secondly, even had he broken his orders to take off, Blackened didn't have the fuel for sustained hovering on its atmospheric thrusters. At least, not if it wanted to break orbit and return to its waiting strike cruiser. The fuel readout showed, at his best estimate, that he could burn the engines for perhaps 15 minutes before he would need to return to the Covenant. If his master emerged and needed immediate extraction while he was away, or even while he was burning fuel in an unnecessary hover, they might not make it back into the void. No, it wasn't even worth considering. So, with the doors sealed, the gang ramp closed, and the weapon turrets trained on the lift building. Septimus waited, eyes narrowed to slits, watching the ship's sensors and deluding himself into thinking he didn't look as worried as he was. "Will you relax?" Eurydice asked, shattering his self-deception. Her boots were up on the control console, and she leaned back into the oversized co-pilot's chair with a creaking squeal of leather. Septimus, by comparison, was arched forward over the Auspex display, watching the green pulse sweep over the screen every 6 seconds. It pulsed outwards from an icon of Blackened in the center of the screen. She made a noncommittal grunt, trying to get his attention. "What?" he said without looking. Another pulse. "You're worried." "Something like that." "When will they get back?" Another pulse, still nothing. "Do I look like they involve me in their plans?" He laughed, though the sound was forced. "Just asking. What are you worried about anyway?" "The prison below us, specifically the inmates." He nodded to the data slate resting on the arm of his chair. Its display screen listed a screed of information in tiny green letters. "This is Internment Spire Delta 2, Septimus explained. "The prisoners kept here are awaiting execution. Though they are kept alive to serve a span of years in deep tunnel mining operations as slave labor, these aren't recidivists or minor criminals. They're murderers, rapists, and heretics." "But the doors are sealed." An edge of hesitancy crept into her voice now, just a thin suggestion of doubt. "No door is invulnerable. The flank bulkheads would stop anything I can imagine. But the main gang ramp works through regular hydraulics. It's sealed and locked, but look, I'm not worried. Just being prepared." "Prepared for what exactly? Why would anyone rush an Astartes gunship? Talk about a death wish." "I don't know. I expect most wouldn't come near us. If they did, well, maybe some might want to try and flee the planet by stealing the ship. Or maybe, given their incarceration here, they're not all that sane to begin with. Or..." He trailed off. "Oh, what? Don't just start a sentence like that and leave it hanging." He shrugged. "Maybe if they had learned there was a woman on board." She nodded, but he could see she was struggling to maintain her bravado. "This gunship has, well, guns, right?" "It does. I don't like the way you said that. Half of the weapons are inactive, including the main battle cannon.
Ammunition is low, and the heavy bolters on the gunship's flanks are no longer enslaved to servitors.
Why not?
Another pause, another blank screen.
Because the servitors are dead. They have been for years, and I was the one tasked with dragging the bodies from their ports.
After several moments of silent staring, another console screen chimed. Septimus turned in his throne, leaning forward to examine the readout.
Well, well, well.
More bad news?
She asked him, not sure she really wanted an answer.
Not exactly. Another ship just took off, and not one of the bulk landers down there on the plains. This one was a Thunderhawk-class vessel. Black Legion identification signals.
Meaning?
The Auspex chimed because it registered First Claw on board the ship as it headed into orbit.
What? They left us here?
Septimus was still watching the screen.
Not all of them. No signal from Talos. He's still in the prison complex.
He was not a man who enjoyed these kinds of mysteries. Septimus turned from the screen to hit a few console keys. Doors secured. A flashing icon on the console read. It was the third time he'd checked the doors in the past hour. As Eurydice drew breath to ask another question, the Auspex chimed again. There was nothing foreboding in the sound. It was almost melodic.
Damn it,
said Septimus, rising from his throne. Eurydice sat up. The Auspex was singing now, tinny chime after tinny chime.
Are we in trouble?
She asked. Septimus was staring out of the forward window, at the open elevator doors, and what came spilling out of them.
Oh, absolutely,
he said, drawing both of his pistols.
Then give me one of those,
she said as she stood, following his gaze.
Take them both,
he said, handing them to her before leaning over the control console.
And don't think about shooting me.
She gave him a withering look that he never saw. Septimus hit a long sequence of console keys, his fingers a blur.
What are you doing?
She asked.
This,
he said, and the gunship's functioning heavy bolter turrets lit up with fire as they unleashed their rage. Joe Maddox couldn't believe his luck. Freedom.
Freedom.
Freedom after 8 years in this damn hellhole. 8 years of eating the cold, bitter gray paste that passed as food, morning, afternoon, and night. 8 years of 14-hour shifts under the earth of this accursed rock, digging and digging and digging in the vain hope of striking a handful of ore. 8 years of backaches, blurred vision, gums burning from infection, and pissing blood after every beating from the guards. Yeah, well, payback had come sure enough. He clutched the shotgun to his chest, racking the slide just to enjoy the feeling. Click, chunk.
Oh, hell yes.
This was something else. He'd taken the weapon from Laffian, but that was all good because Laffian had been one of the worst guards in our sector. Our sector. Omega-level transgressions only. Was home no longer for Maddox, and the fact that he could still feel Laffian's blood on his face was just that little extra touch of victory. That was payback, too. Payback for the time Laffian had smacked Jesper around so bad the poor fool's eye had popped out from his broken head. Maddox grinned, the stench of his teeth making his eyes water. Laffian hadn't looked so cocksure with his chest blown open and his leg hacked off at the knee. He'd screamed about his kids, too. Yeah, like that would make a difference. Maddox's grin became a snigger.
Shut your mouth, Black Jaw,
someone next to him said. Maddox swallowed, pressing his lips together. In the close confines of the lift car, which was an uncomfortable fit for almost 50 of them, several of the men curled their lips or swore at him in grunting monotone.
Sorry,
he mumbled. But that just got them complaining again. It wasn't his fault. His gums were infected. His teeth were black and loose in his jaws. The few that remained, anyway. Wasn't like they had access to a doctor in our sector, was it? And they smelled just as bad anyway. 50 of them all sweating and bloody in their white overalls.
"You stink too,"
he muttered. Bodies started to move, to turn in his direction. Maddox lowered his head a little, avoiding all eye contact as the man ahead turned around.
"What's that, Blackjaw?"
It was Indriga, a solid 2 meters of tattooed muscle and knife scars. He'd been stuck on our sector for killing and eating some poor hap-wife.
"Nothing, nothing, Indriga. Damn right, nothing. Now shut your mouth, before we all throw up."
He kept his head down, doing his best not to smile. He couldn't help it, though. He kept seeing Laffian howling and thrashing around with no leg, and the trembling smile became a blurted cough of a snigger. A droplet of warm, thick saliva plopped onto the stock of his stolen shotgun. Laffian's gun. He laughed again. The men around him turned away, swearing. He likely would have died then and there had the lift not ground to a halt and the doors opened. The thin, ash-tasting air floated in to meet them as the prisoners looked out onto the landing platform.
"There it is,"
Indriga said, already walking out. It was a ship, a small vessel by troopship standards, and that was about the only frame of reference Maddox had. He'd been Imperial Guard before his arrest for whatever they'd said he'd done. He hadn't done anything, and he knew it. No way, not him. He was Guard through and through. Damned if he could even remember what they'd insisted he'd done wrong now. Someone shoving him forward jolted his senses back to the present.
"Let's take it,"
one of them said. It was vaguely hawkish, with downswept wings, and it was dark blue, like the color of the deepest oceans. The thought of that made Maddox's stomach quiver and bunch. He hated the sea. He couldn't put his head below the surface without imagining something deep down there looking back at him. He was one of the stragglers, while most of his fellow prisoners ran forwards with their stolen clubs and guns held high. Their saviors, the Guard warriors in black, had chosen some of the strongest and fittest inmates in our sector to come up here and perform this sacred duty. There were people in this ship, and they had to die. The gods had spoken. And, hell yes, one of them was supposed to be a woman. It was good to be free. It was good to be the chosen champion of the gods that had bestowed upon him the freedom he so richly deserved. Even the awful air tasted better than usual. These were the thoughts swirling around Jurl Blackjaw Maddox's mind as he died. When he went down, he was still too lost in his thoughts of freedom to really comprehend what was happening to him. And he died with his body in pieces, still smiling, and still smelling terrible as he laughed without any sound leaving his lips. The turret cannons on the gunship blazed away, bolt rounds streaming out to thump home into yielding flesh, only to detonate a moment after impact. Inmates were reduced to shattering husks of meat and bone, thrown across the landing platform in ugly smears. From the vox speakers mounted on the Thunderhawk's exterior, a voice spoke calmly in heavily accented Gothic.
"Welcome, all of you," Septimus said. "Please, enjoy the last mistake you'll ever make."
Sirion checked his bolter again, then clamped it once more to his thigh armor.
"Stop that," voxed Malik. "You look irritated."
"I can't think why," Sirion sneered.
First Claw and their Atramentar escort sat in the restraint thrones of a Black Legion gunship, their surroundings vibrating as the Thunderhawk juddered through the atmosphere.
"Will they take Blackened?" Sirion asked. "It would be a foolish error if they tried."
"They just want to tell us," Zal said.
He clicked the blinking rune that confirmed a private channel with Sirion.
"And the Atramentar knew it would happen. They were here to ensure we did not step out of line and backed down at the first need to shed blood.
The Exalted planned this.
Sirion's voice was tired. The weight of the prisoner's fears, although faded now, still rested heavily on his mind.
I grow weary of this, Zal.
Of what?
The treachery, the death of trust, of my mind aching from the silent, weeping terror of mortals.
Zal said nothing at first. Sympathy was not in his blood.
You're tainted, Sirion,
he said at last.
Something like that,
Sirion replied. He took a breath.
The Exalted has always resented Talos's position in the Legion as a favored son of our father, but this was a step too far. To attempt to kill him? Is Vandred insane?
Zal's response came after a bitter laugh.
What makes you so sure he wanted Talos dead?
Out of the way, certainly. Perhaps among the ranks of the Black Legion. A gain for both Abaddon and the Exalted.
Like Reuven, Sirion said.
Yes, brother,
Zal said, his voice lower now.
Like Reuven.
Eurydice swore with feeling as the Thunderhawk shook again.
Throne, I don't want to die here.
Septimus didn't turn to look at her. His focus was entirely on the ammunition readouts, which were dropping with heart-wrenching speed. He clicked the vox live.
This is the 8th Legion Thunderhawk blackened. It's not working.
Eurydice swallowed her panic at his desperate attempts.
The Covenant can't hear you. Talos can't hear you.
Shut up,
he replied.
This is the 8th Legion Thunderhawk blackened. Hailing the battle barge Hunter's Premonition, do you read?
The what?
Another one of our ships is in orbit, he said. One of the Night Lord's flagships.
Why aren't you shooting?
He didn't even need to glance at the ammo displays.
Because every gun that can track a target this close to the hull is out of shells.
The cockpit shook again, this time hard enough to throw Eurydice back onto her chair.
Throne!
She shouted. Septimus winced.
That wasn't good. They're inside.
What?
He didn't answer her.
This is the 8th Legion Thunderhawk blackened, hailing the battle barge Hunter's Premonition. Please respond!
Voices could be heard yelling in the deck below. The prisoners that had survived the annihilation offered by the heavy bolters were definitely inside now.
Damn it!
Septimus abandoned the console and pulled the curved hacking blade that was strapped to his calf.
Worth a try.
Eurydice tossed him one of the pistols.
Looks like I won't be guiding your heretic masters through the Sea of Souls after all.
She smiled a nasty little grin, somewhere between bitterness, terror, and triumph. Septimus raised his pistol at the closed cockpit door.
We'll see,